Hello, I'm Jim Mallard, host of The Mallard Report. On The Mallard Report, along with my guest, we will have a conversation where we will share thoughts and opinions. For more information, my bio, past shows, social media links, and so much more, visit mallard.com. MALLIARD.com. And thanks for listening. Couple housekeeping things. First things first, veritiesapparel.com/mallard. Save. I'm not even sure what you're saving over there anymore, because he's got a huge sale going on. He's got everything marked down. I want to thank Aaron again. Ending, 7-month run as a sponsor of the Mallard Report, and got another one coming up. So if you haven't been to Verities Apparel, now would be the time. He might be back in the fall. He might not be. We'll see how that all plays out. But he wants a little time to clean up some inventory and do some other things. And as luck would have it, somebody else said, "Hey, I want to buy that spot." And I said, "Sure." So it all worked out. The other thing, you might have just heard it. It's rumbling here. It's thunder and lightning. And so if the show just disappears magically, we don't blame demons tonight. We blame weather, at least right now. But we might blame them here in a little bit. My guest tonight is religious demonologist Dave Considine. Dave, how you been?
Doing well. Yourself?
Pretty good.
Complaining, huh?
I was going to say, now we're done complaining, yeah. Pretty good.
Weather demons.
Weather demons. We'll get into that here in a little bit. First, now, this takes me back a ways. Now, you've told me about this before on the show, but I've got a bunch of new listeners. I can't find it in the archives, so you're going to help me out here. At one point, you translated my name back to Hammer, and I don't remember how that all went. Can you help me out with that again? Because I was going to post it as a sound bite just for fun, but I couldn't find it.
What was that again?
You pulled my name back to Hammer through some origin thing, Latin or Greek or something.
Yeah, matter of fact, I came across that. I don't remember myself. I don't remember what it was in relation to.
Okay, at least you remember. Okay, so at least you remember it. So I'm not losing my mind.
I can't myself.
Okay, at least I'm not losing my mind. Okay, good.
No.
Because ever for a while, I'm like, I could have swore I heard Dave talking about that, but
it's been a few years.
It has. Well, it's only been two since you've been on.
Yeah,
of course, it was four before the last time. But we're not going to talk about the last time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you have some great guests on. I mean, there's a lot of people to cover. There's a lot of people in the paranormal right now.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing since we're here?
Yeah. Everything from holistic to eclectic to conspiratorial.
Yeah.
You know, you cover everything.
So, okay. So speaking of covering everything, I have not even touched, I did mention it in passing, but that's not even fair. Lorraine Lauren has passed since the last time we spoke, obviously, because it was just happened recently. Give me, I mean, obviously you had a working relationship with her, but can you put into context what that means for the paranormal field?
We would, all of us, and even covering other subjects, you know, just the spark of the paranormal, if it wasn't for them, both of them together, that team inspired people to wonder and to step in to help. They inspired ministers. They inspired laymen. They inspired the public, people to protect themselves. These movies, movies are movies, okay? They tell a story. It's not exactly what happened in these stories, you know, The Conjuring case and these other ones, there is license that's given to, you know, to be able to make the story so it's feasible on screen. These stories, they presented this to the public, and they let you decide. I mean, Ed and Lorraine never, you know, they never told people exactly. I mean, they told you information, let you decide for yourself. I mean, the reason for lecturing was to inspire, you know, young minds, you know, where they can think about this and not just think about science or just think about sociology. Just go beyond that. Think outside the box. That there's the possibility that there's something there. It's something that intrigued them, and they wanted other people to be aware of it. They had an absolute impact on the paranormal. Like I said, it covered all areas. I mean, people are even getting the information now. You know, individuals who knew them, like myself, in my team and other people who were close to them, we know that they covered other subjects. You'll look in their books, like in their early Ghost Hunter book, they covered a case that included Bigfoot. There was cases that I did with them that covered UFOs. There was other cases that went so sideways that you can't even categorize some of these, but they were involved with many, many subjects. So they were terrific in their field of work. They were able to get interviews done. They saved the information. They were able to take that information, put it into these to books that they released at certain times, and they helped the people to learn. And they learned along the way. I miss them tremendously. I know everyone out there, even individuals who didn't know them, they felt like they knew them. Lorraine had that ability to do that. Ed did too. You know, you sit down with Lorraine, she just a sweetheart. You know, she was sweet to everybody. You felt like you knew her for your whole life.
And you mentioned keeping track of all that stuff, and that's pre-digital age, everybody. We got to keep this all in context. It's a lot easier to keep track of stuff now with documents and, you know, everything you can just throw on a computer. It's a little different keeping track of paper files. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm just that disorganized, but...
Yeah, that's what Tony and Judy are doing now, you know, going through these things. Good people. They have good people on the team now. The New England Society for Psychic Research is still going, and they're going strong. And they'll continue going.
So not to put you on the spot here, but I'm going to because that's what I do here. Besides you, I'm going to put you in this category. Maybe that'll make this a little bit easier. There's a lot of entertainers out there in the field right now, or TV stars, whatever you want to call them. Okay, jeez, hate mail goes to Dave Considine at what was your? Oh, never mind. Bad email address. But I know there's a lot of serious researchers out there, but I mentioned your name a couple times this afternoon as, you know, people were asking me who the guest on the show was, and I normally don't even tell anybody, but since you were coming on, you're so well respected in the field, I wanted to mention that to them. And who else out there should people be looking at? Because, like I said, I think some of it gets lost in the entertainment value of it all.
Well, it's hard to say because then, you know, that's how you get your enemies. You know, why didn't you mention me, you know? people out there, like, you know, you have, I mean, in any field, you mean? Covering any field or just, you know, the field of work?
However you want to handle it. Or maybe some...
People like Stan Gordon. People like Stan Gordon. And Stan Gordon's another one who covers, you know, multiple areas of the paranormal. Not just UFOs, Bigfoot, paranormal activity, 14, stuff like that. But individuals like him. Lloyd Auerbach. Fantastic researcher. He's been involved with this for so long. Individuals like this, you know, people who have been involved with this, stuck with this, you don't see them very often on TV. The ones you don't see, they're the ones that are getting the research done. The ones that are writing all these books, I'm sure they're getting some research done, but I don't know. You're on the TV, you're writing all these books, you're constantly doing all these lectures, you're on the lecture circuit. I don't know how much research you're really doing.
Yeah, it does baffle me sometimes. You see... the book, and then the
bakery going on there.
Yeah, the car wash that you go through trying not to promote the book, you know, all the different shows, and then you go out and do five or six lectures, and then a week goes by, and hey, you got a new book, and guess what? We rinse and repeat,
people
and I'm like...
people steal information. You know, they listen to these radio shows. I've had people that I've known, that other researchers that were, quote-unquote, people that were in the entertainment business, we'll say, they took their research and were using it and said it was theirs. It's basically like a comedian stealing other people's stuff. You know, someone is taking their research, and then they go on the radio maybe one or two, maybe three times a year, and then someone else is listening, and they take their research.
It's just amazing to me. I mean, I believe it's true, but it's just amazing. It shocks me, I guess.
They don't understand it. They take the research and half understand it. That's what's going on today with everyone. They're fascinated by these subjects. You know, you have this Stockholm Syndrome, which you and I have talked about before. And that's something that also irks the public and people who want to, you know, anybody who wants to get involved with this. It's either they're afraid of it and they want to bond with it, or they want to bond with it because they want to become somebody. Everybody wants a YouTube channel. Come on with me. I'm going to a haunted graveyard.
Well, Dave,
I'm going to pull up some graves and see if we can get some ghosts riled here.
It's funny because I seriously have a very limited string of notes for tonight because I knew we'd just start talking and I wouldn't need them. But the one thing that I wrote down and underlined it, I wanted to make sure I talked to you about, because I said this a couple days ago on an interview, and you would have thought I would have ripped the host head off pretty much because I said it, is not everybody's demons are demons. There are earthly things like addictions, gambling, you know. And you would have thought I just crushed.
Psychiatric disorders. I mean, you have conditions, you know, you have conversion disorder where the person will look, they'll fall right on the ground on their back with their feet up and their hands up and they'll be flailing and it looks like they're being raped and they were raped many, many years ago. It's something that their body is going through again and they'll be screaming. So you'll think this person's possessed. And they don't know what happened because they may have a time where they have no memory of this. You know, other people do have memory of it. It's like an epileptic seizure. Some have conscious memory of it, some don't.
Well, see, I'm even going more to the root of they've got all these bad things going on in their life, and then they have, I'll just say it, a drug addiction, for example.
Yeah.
And they want to blame demons because, well, it wouldn't be their inner demons. It'd be ghostly, I mean, not ghostly demons, but religious demons. Come on, it can't be me. It's got to be something else. And
a lot of individuals, they go to the ministers and they get these deliverances. So you see these people in lines and they go up to these ministers and they get whacked in the head with the Bible and, you know, get that demon of alcohol out of you. And, you know, this individual should have gone to someone to talk to, you know, I mean, about their problems, a counselor, a psychiatrist. This is not good.
Yeah, and then they think it works. Yeah, they think it worked, you know, for 24 to 48 hours.
It's a Band-Aid. And then they're going to go again and again, and that person is becoming addicted to having exorcisms. And we've had a few of them that we had to stop, you know, where we thought, you know, this really happened earlier in our time doing this. We've been doing this now I've been doing it for 32 years. It's my 32nd year. And what I mean by that, I see a lot of people out there, I've been doing this since I was 9 years old. No. Cases since 87. So working like with people in houses, not like reading comic books about ghosts.
We're watching Scooby-Doo.
32 years. As a matter of fact, I want to mention before I forget, the Phantasm Psychic Research website, which as a matter of fact had to go down. We had to take that down 2 months ago because we had a problem with a hacking problem. Actually, it wasn't a hacking problem. It was a takeover by a site called Site 5. I don't know if I can mention it on here, but
you just did.
We had a real problem with anyway, we had a problem with that, so we're reforming everything, and it's going to be back up in the summer. But this is the 25th year it's been online, so it's the oldest religious demonology / paranormal website in the world, because there was nothing before it. Matter of fact, we were up before Ed Lorenz.
It's crazy.
A long time ago.
That's, you know.
94.
Well, I don't know if I should say happy anniversary or not. That's just kind of...
Yeah. The only other, there was other paranormal ones, though. Renz, I think, is older than us. I think so. Renz. I don't know if you're familiar with that. He does a radio show. He's the one who was involved in sightings. Yeah, sightings. The very early sightings things, yeah.
Is he still doing a show? Do you know?
I don't know. He has a fantastic show, fantastic website. I enjoyed it way back then. I think he's been up since the early 90s. I don't know how he was able to grow up so early, but he did. He was up a long time.
I remember back in the day when I first
got
internet.
He's got it in the paranormal. He's one of the oldest, I think, out there.
As I say, I remember back when I first got internet, I'd be lucky to get a song overnight. And now I'm sitting here doing video and audio, and, you know, it's just like, da-da-da-da. Before, I was trying to get, like, 2 minutes of music. It took 8 hours.
Yeah, no YouTube.
No YouTube.
No iTunes.
The good days, back before everything got complicated. No, it's we have talked about that before, about people who claim to be doing things for most of their lives, and it doesn't even make sense. And it just baffles me, I guess. Has that slowed down at all? Maybe you mentioned how much of the other stuff I covered, I kind of got away from it all because it was getting, I wanted to knock some heads off, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's just, you know, you have to spend time in this to understand it. You're dealing with a subject that's just, wow. I mean, anybody I know, even individuals that have been involved with this longer than me, that I talk to, they don't know what's going on. I mean, there are things that we just cannot wrap our heads around. And I was just discussing with Barbie about a few things for the topics tonight. And, you know, when you have creatures like a Bigfoot-type creature with an insectoidal head, I think I mentioned this case to you before, running through an apricot field in front of witnesses. What are you dealing with here? And then it just disappears. Other times we have creatures like this talking into people's heads, visiting them in their dreams, making them go on adventures, basically, you know, and they become sometimes even cult leaders. It's really a strange thing. It's very sad that the governments of the world do not study this, or did they?
I was going to say, didn't we just get a UFO disclosure the other day?
What's that?
Didn't we just get UFO disclosure the other day? The Pentagon said they've been looking at UFOs, though?
I think not. I don't know what they think, but, you know, it's just like, it's such a... the information is just terrible. I mean, everyone still thinks that Area 51 is involved with UFOs. That's sad.
Well, I want to know what's there. I want to know what's there. I want to know what's there. I just want to go hang out. Say, yeah. I've been there. Can't talk about it, but I've been there. That's all I want to do.
Sad, you know. And it's, again, a sad thing with Roswell. Roswell were Fugo balloons. Fugo balloons, they launched 35,000 of these things. These things were found all the way up into the 1960s. They found one up, I believe, up in Nova Scotia. So that was all the way from Japan, riding the jet stream, all the way to Nova Scotia. Some of these things did land. Matter of fact, one landed inside of a car of two people driving in a convertible. One landed in the backyard of a woman. These people were killed. But they never said nothing about it because it would be a bad thing.
I just got a call from the Roswell Tourist Board, and they said, of course, an alien spaceship crashed here. That was not a weather balloon from the Roswell Tourist Bureau. So.
Well, what it was is that the bottom of that was round. It did look like kind of like a UFO. The other part was like a parachute-type material, but it was coated with a chromium-type like plating, like a cigarette foil.
Well, isn't that what the Hindenburg was? What was the Hindenburg coated with that caught fire so quickly?
I believe it was the same thing. That went up quick. But if you notice, Max Brazel, he had said that there was the storm the night before, and he heard explosions. That's what set off. See, these things had explosive, some had explosive gas in them, others had explosives on them that were solid-type explosives. I'm not sure what they used, but each one was different. These things were very sophisticated. They were able to ride the jet stream. And obviously they made it here. But this is, I think, what brought about the they'll harm you if you say anything. I think this is where this came from. This wasn't from UFOs. This is from government officials going to people and saying, if you say that these things landed, you say what went on here, and we're gonna do something to you. Because they didn't know what to do with this. I think that's what happened with the L.A. flyover, too. When they were firing at that thing, they were firing right straight through that thing. A barrage of rounds. Because when they shine the lights, it looks like one of those Fugo balloons. And it's around the same time. And they've launched, I think, up to 35,000. And how I learned this was from John Keel. John Keel did the research and found this out.
So, you mentioned to me...
An article in Popular Mechanics that he had referenced. But don't quote me on that. But I think it was a Popular Mechanics reference, which was from the 1960s article.
So you mentioned to me what right before we started about the Men in Black. So we're kind of right in that neighborhood. So let's go there. What are you thinking about that?
Well, on Friday I'm going to be posting a kind of an area on our sister site, and I'll mention it at the end, or I can mention it now with the.
We'll mention it now. We'll mention it again at the end because
okay,
you know, we have to do these things.
They can go to. Address. Okay, it'll be www. This is just a temporary site, but I want to get this started. I want to do this for different subjects, but here's the website, www.i-m.mx/phantasm/paranormal portal. Now, you'll see where it's the it's like a an independent study of the Men in Black. We're going to try over a year period of time, each one of these subjects, a year period of time, to have people write us about their encounters. Like we'll say this subject here was the Men in Black. One thing I want to get across to people, and if I speak to, you know, to the public and all the other forums, I want to make sure I tell them, Men in Black, I don't mean this just men in black suits with black sunglasses. If you've had a paranormal encounter, or if you've had some type of, you know, anything paranormal, anything supernatural, anything that you feel that was out of the ordinary, and then you get kind of a visit by somebody that's out of the ordinary, and they seem to know about this event, and maybe they question you about this. If you've had one of these encounters, if you can go to the site and just give us a brief report about what happened, if there was any witnesses with you, give us, you know, like a time, and if it's something that's interesting or something that we feel would help the research, we'll contact you if you can leave your phone number. So I just want to just get a grasp, a little bit more of a grasp, or what the public is right now is experiencing with these things. Because we get these different graphs showing that we have a rise in this and a rise in that, but I want to see the interaction of the public. Kind of like David, Peter Davenport, I'm sorry, he takes the reports for UFO reports. It's I think, you know, it's pretty much just for UFO reports, but this is kind of like that. It's going to be like a data thing just for about a year, just to collect this, and we can go through it and sift through it and to see if there's any connections between any of these things. And some way we'll get this back out so people can, maybe we can just put it together in some way so people can understand it too. And we'll post it on a public forum. You know, maybe they can get to it by the website. The new website we'll have up by the summer. And we'll also be posting stuff on Facebook about it. So,
as I say, that's an interesting thing because, you know, I've heard all these stories about the Men in Black, but I can't remember like one being within the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems, you know,
a
distant memory, or you know, a secondhand story from somebody.
Yeah, Black Eyed Children took kind of the front end on this, but you know, in my years of doing this research and covering just about every subject, trying to, these Black Eyed Children it's a fairly recent thing. I'm not going to say phenomenon. I'm going to say thing, because this is you can't quite put your thumb on this one. It's like this stick man, smiling man. I think these are more just stories. This type of creature may show up, but this is not a specific phenomenon. It's not. I don't believe myself that black-eyed children are like a phenomenon like Bigfoot or UFOs in standing. If people are experiencing something, it's just appearing as that, but its standard is not that.
Yeah, there's something. It's that black-eyed children, I've just never, I mean, I've seen it going around, but I've never had a guest on to talk about it, because I guess I'm sounding like you. It just doesn't, when I put the pieces together.
They can't appear that way. I'm sure that's something, you know, of an evil nature that is able to shift its appearance in some way. It can appear as something like a child to entice you. You know, we've had instances of people seeing children on the road. There may or may not be stories of children with black eyes, you know, or encounters on the road, or just maybe on a hike. I've had a few stories that I've heard where people were on a hiking trail that saw a young girl that looked like they had black eyes. But then, you know, you can't verify this either. I need someone to fill out a report. Is there any other witnesses? Is it something we can, you know, something of substance?
Well, it's just like all the Bigfoot stuff anymore. It kind of gets me, why don't we have any pictures?
Yeah. I myself have had encounters. That's the reason that I pursue it myself, the Bigfoot encounters. I had my encounter in Missouri. Matter of fact, when I was in basic training. When I had my encounter, I was guarding a golf course. Now, I was already in the paranormal. So this kind of really freaked me out. It was a moonlit night. I think it was a full moon. And I was in the guard shack. And like I said, I was guarding a golf course. Why, I have no idea. But I saw something crossing the road, and it crossed it in two steps. I didn't see it very well, but it looked like it was quite tall. I mean, 6.5 feet at least. Pretty tall. And it was able to cross now, I don't know if you've ever seen the dump trucks that the National Guard, when you see them going down the highway, you see the dump truck, about that wide, and it crossed it in two steps. And I was kind of scared. I wasn't sure what I just wasn't expecting it. You know, that's one thing about the paranormal. It's going to hit you when you least expect it. But I thought it might have been one of the drill sergeants. They give you 3 rounds, and I don't know if they were really live or not, and I thought they were testing you. Because we did have a very large drill sergeant, and I thought that they put him in a mop suit or something like that, like one of the, you know, ghillie suit. And had him walk across, but it just didn't look normal. So it kind of intrigued me, and I had some cases along the way that we had casts that were made of the footprints. I had one that I posted was 19 inches. I had one that was 13 and a half inches, and the canis bone on the foot went to the ground around 3 inches. I think it was 3 or 3.5 inches. And that was cast also.
19 inches.
Some have three toes. Some have five toes. Some have very strange toes. But the dermal ridges, we're working on a case right now that I've received a photograph that we have dermal ridges in the photograph. It's a very, very good photograph. And there's going to be casts made of these, but there's dermal ridges all over the bottom of the heel of the foot, the upper part of the foot, the toes. I mean, you can see the circles where it spirals. So that's what you're really looking for. You're looking for a print, but not just a print that has dermal ridges. And this is, you know, matter of fact, I didn't know this. I talked to some people who were Bigfoot researchers, and this is something they were looking into. So that's why it's really good to be able to kind of exchange information between different subjects. But I try to, be in contact with people of other subjects, you know, but something that they taught me. So I look for that now. So it's pretty good to be able to verify things, you know. That's what you need in this. When you're looking at anything in the paranormal, it's really hard to verify. Trace evidence, you know. When you're looking at UFOs, I mean, sometimes you're looking at a powdery substance that'll leave behind. You know, or you're looking for something like in the crop circles, you're looking for the exploded inner husk. That inner part exploded, where you have a tremendous release of energy. That's how you know it's real or not. So these different things, when I talk to people who do crop circles, or when they do Bigfoots, they do these different things, I want to know those little tiny things that they're looking at, because when I have cases, because I get a lot of different subjects, so I want to know, you know, what to look for. Otherwise, I'm going to blow the case. You know, like Linda Moulton Howe, she goes around to cattle mutilation with a magnet. I wouldn't have known that if I didn't learn that from Linda Moulton Howe. So it's you know, you see these individuals on TV shows, or you know them in person or whatever, you learn different things. And I suggest that people look at those little tiny details, you know, especially people who have been involved with this a long time. Now, I wouldn't know to bring a magnet around a, you know, catamutilation, that you can find different things. And they did.
Never would have crossed my mind either. That's a good thing to
figure out. Little particles.
You just said crop circles, and I'm again, here I am sitting going, when was the last one that we've had?
We had a few years back here in Connecticut.
Okay, so maybe you know something I don't know here, because I'm dumbfounded.
I don't know if it was real or not. It was, matter of fact, it was right in the middle of the New Haven Green. And what's odd about that is the New Haven Green is actually a cemetery. Most people don't realize that in New Haven, Connecticut, the green that's in New Haven, I don't know if you've ever been to New Haven, Connecticut, but maybe someone out there listening has, that the green in the middle of the city, they just removed the tombstones and put them into the cemetery across the street, and everybody who walks on there, the bums that sleep on there, and everybody, I don't think they realize it's a cemetery. I think this goes on in a lot of cities.
Some
of your cities that were colonial, they just kind of like take the stones and move them.
Yeah, you know, actually that happened in the one town that I lived in. They picked up the stones and just moved on.
Yeah. Matter of fact, they had a tree, one of the storms, a tree blew over, and there was bones in the roots of the tree. So obviously the tree must have grown into the coffin, and it ripped the coffin.
Well, back in the day, I mean.
Yeah, it's sad because they brought the bones into Yale University, but I didn't hear anything about them putting the bones back. So I think you should put the bones back. And that's strange because that was a year prior to this crop circle. So it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I don't think it was real, but if it was real, I wonder if it had to do with them not putting those bones back in that cemetery, which they're saying is not there, because they don't talk about it much. Matter of fact, if you ever do come to Connecticut and you go to New Haven, Connecticut, Trinity Church, at the corner of that green, you go underground, and there's tombs underground. And you can actually walk through there. They give you a tour. There's actually a whole cemetery underground, underneath the church.
I'm just dumbfounded. Dave, you're doing good at dumbfounding me tonight. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we're just going to take it at this point.
I think you would find it interesting. You know, not too many churches have, you know, graveyards in the basement.
In the basement, yeah. See, that's what I'm sitting here going. I mean, I'm a fan of graveyards. I mean, I spend a lot of time in them just kind of hanging out, not doing paranormal things, just hanging out, because where else can you go to get away from it all? Who wants to go to a park with a bunch of screaming kids? I mean, honestly.
No. Go online, go on YouTube, and Trinity Church, New Haven, graveyard, underground graveyard, if anyone out there is listening to this, you'll find it on YouTube. I think this one gentleman, he filmed some of it, so you can see what it looks like underneath there. But all the graves, it's all cobblestone. So the cobblestone's over the graves, and the tombstone comes, there's cobblestones missing, and the tombstone's put there, up. So it looks like a graveyard, but just picture there's no grass, and where the grass would be is cobblestones.
It's funny we talk about moving them, because I had forgotten until we started talking about this. I was doing an investigation in that former town, and the owner of the house comes to me, you know, mid-investigation. He says, "You want to know something?" I said, "Sure. I've got a couple headstones in the basement." And I said, "Really now? Let's go." You know? And
yeah,
sure enough...
Names, right? Graveyard?
Yeah, and sure enough, they were from the old graveyard, and apparently they made it that far, and the guy took a break, or got bored, or whatever. Just, they kind of hung out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still there, 100 and how many ever years later.
Well, she's not using for a walkway.
No, they're...
That happened. Matter of fact, in one of the cases with Ed and Lorraine, we were walking up the walkway, and I'm looking down, and I said, "Ed, there's names on these stones." And Ed's like, "Those are tombstones." So the walkway was made of tombstones. They had a postage stamp graveyard, and somebody who lived there took those tombstones and made a walkway with them. Yeah. We've also found them in rock walls.
Okay, well, that makes, I mean,
yeah,
maybe.
That's a lazy landscaper, but the ones for the walkways, that's not lazy. That's, I don't care.
But, you know, I feel that way about the modern ones that have the you know, the modern cemeteries out there. That are all with all the flat stones. They're like a bad couple years away from being just an overgrown field with those flat stones laying everywhere.
Yeah. But
excuse,
I guess,
me.
You know, it's just the point of it, I guess.
Yeah, I know. But that's headed towards that walkway thing, I guess.
Mm. Probably someone who wasn't in graveyards, I guess.
I guess maybe
someone
now.
Someone who's immortal?
I guess maybe now we're more aware of what graveyards are around. But then again, there are some people.
Yeah.
Who have the family plot still that, you know, that family moves and a generation goes by and, hey, we could build out our deck, get rid of those stuff.
It's amazing how fast the family name can just end, because you can, especially, you know, years and years ago with the disease and, you know, if someone wasn't able to have children, there was the factors that were involved with that, you know. So it's, you only have a few children, and they're not able to have kids. That's about it for that. I guess that's why they had, like, 18, 24 kids back in the day.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I was like, wow, these families were huge. And they never were happy. Anytime you look at these photographs of these people, grimaces.
Well, oh, Dave, you know that's not true, because I had to stand so still for those pictures back in the day.
I know. I still get a kick out of those ones that the people are saying, you know, making fun of them. They don't realize they're corpses.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was just thinking that, you know, how many of those pictures were taken when they couldn't move
at all?
The guy
looks like he's dead, because he is dead.
Yeah. They looked a little bit happier then, dead.
I don't know about that, but those are hard times. It just amazes me, you know, just how different they were in those days. But I don't think those people would make walkways out of tombstones, though.
Probably not.
No, they'd probably be square against that. But, yeah, but anyway, yeah, speaking of graveyards, back to that Men in Black thing, I'm going to include also an encounter that I had, one of a few encounters with the Men in Black, and this one occurred in the graveyard. I don't know if I ever told you about this one.
Well, tell me about this one, because it doesn't ring a bell, so.
Well, I went with an investigator named Steve. Now, in the story, where I wrote it down so people can read this, I don't know if I mentioned it or not. I think, yeah, I did, that we had gone to Pine Bush. This happened a while back. Remember when Pine Bush, New Jersey was Pine Bush, New York was having the UFO wave?
Yeah.
Quite a few years, yeah. Well, we went down there. We were checking that out. We went down there a few times. And checking out witnesses. I remember I interviewed one guy in a bathroom in a McDonald's. But anyway, long story short, you know, some restaurant owners, some people that were there, we knew that were, you know, had to be there, so we didn't know who to go to.
Yeah.
But we ended up going to this graveyard because we wanted to test out some equipment. We figured it would be better to test out equipment before we got to any given case, because you don't want to be testing stuff out with a live family. Family's already upset, and you know, you're not getting the information. We don't really want to spend a lot of time there either, so jacking up cases by spending too much time in a case. So we went down to this graveyard one particular night, pulled up in front of the gates, one of the gates, got out of the van, grabbed my stuff, and when we did, we smelled what smelled like sewage. It smelled like a really, really bad odor. There was houses around. I figured that maybe it was just a broken sewage line or something like that, and it was pretty strong. Got our stuff, started walking in. We wanted to walk all the way to the back. It was like a horseshoe, shaped like a horseshoe. We walked all the way to the back, found a good spot. Steve started taking his equipment out, and I started taking my equipment out. We started setting up, and I got two tape recorders out. I ran two different types of tape. I ran ferric oxide and standard CL for the other one. I think it was, CL. But I ran two different types of tape because I wasn't sure which one would be better for taping spiritual voices. Like I said, this is quite a long time ago, so we're testing all kinds of things. I was using reel-to-reels, all kinds of things. We didn't have any digital yet. So I walked and put the tape recorders where they needed to be, best places I could find. I came back. We started doing what we were doing. Now, we started changing up because we wanted to. We had some like radiation meters, we had EMF meters, some of the stuff, you know, the early stuff that we had to be able to play with. So we're going around with this, and this would be multiple times going to these places. We went even some of the known haunted places, like known haunted houses that we would visit. Like I said, we wanted to do this outside of working with people who had kids and stuff like that. But anyway, we're testing out all this equipment. We finally settled on started to take photographs. So we started taking photographs around, and I wanted to split up from him. And I don't know, maybe an hour had passed. Well, I asked Steve at one point in time what time it was. And I think we had been taking photographs for just a little bit, but I asked him what time it was, and he didn't know. He left his watch in the car. So I said to him, give me the keys, and I walked to where the gate was, and we were parked right outside the gate. When I walked out, I noticed to my left-hand side that there was a guy sitting there, and he had his hands up to his face, and he was staring out to the road. This is like a road that passes right in front of this graveyard. Let me describe this graveyard a little bit more in detail. There's a town hall building right in the middle, and there's a gate that we went into, which is on the right-hand side, and there's another gate on the left-hand side. So the town hall's in the middle, and there's one gate on one side, one gate on the other. There's a road that runs right in front of this place. Okay, so anyway, I saw him. I kind of went to the car, I don't remember if I said anything. I'd have to look. I remember reviewing it and trying to remember it as best I could and writing it down. I could go and get my notes, but I'll just try to tell it the best way I can. Because this instance, this encounter was just so surreal that you question everything in your mind. But anyway, I went up to the car, got the watch, and hold on a second. Let me get my notes on this so I can tell this perfectly here. Just give me a moment.
Oh, you're fine.
Just don't want to, because there's certain things that happen at certain times. I just want to make sure that I want to, at some point in time, get an interview with Steve to see what he remembers of this. Because this was quite a long time ago. This is over 25 years ago. This is when we were first, you know, really doing the equipment heavy, you know, hot and heavy with the cases and whatnot. Let me see here. Okay. Okay, God, I just realized I didn't bring a watch. Okay, I asked Steve what time it was, unfortunately for me, blah, blah, blah. Okay, when I passed the hearth of the cemetery gates, I had an uneasy feeling, and I immediately looked to my left for some unknown reason. And when I did, I noticed a man in a fine suit and a hat. Like I said, this guy had his hands up to his face, and he wasn't really responding to me at all. I got some lightning here.
Nice. I heard it.
Yeah. That's why I'm a little nervous right now on the phone, because I've been seeing these flashes as we've been talking here. Okay, not thinking too much about it. Okay, I walk towards the car, open the door, I grab Steve's watch from the council. I wrote this kind of like a affidavit for myself of what the event, how it happened, and I'm trying to scroll here, and I'm not. I have this online, so I'm not sure if this storm is, like, messing with this. Okay, quite a bit of time had passed. Okay, locking the door, I began walking back towards the cemetery gates, noticing now the man was staring straight ahead. Before I reached the gate, I called out to him, "Hey, how are you doing?" There was absolutely no response. Feeling slightly dejected, I continued walking back to where Steve was. I told Steve that there was an odd guy sitting out front, out by the steps of the building. I handed him his watch, and Steve asked me who I thought it might be. I said I had no clue. Soon we were back at it, but this time we were focusing on taking random photos in different parts of the cemetery. Steve stayed in the back area of the cemetery, and I headed towards the front upper corner of the cemetery because I wanted to take some photos near a huge pine tree located in that area. Instantaneously, I began feeling uneasy again and trying to ignore it. I tossed it up to the heebie-jeebies. At this time, I began taking photos towards the area of the large pine. First photo, click. Second photo, click. Now something appears in front of me in the window, in the viewfinder. A strange whirling form of some kind. I snapped the third photo, click. This time, it's closer. Now, this thing, I'm going to say it in my own words here, this thing was right in front of me. It was like whirling. The only way I can describe it is like a Tasmanian devil. I wasn't expecting this at all. It was like out of the blue. Every time that I've come across, even in houses or outside or whatever, it comes up on you when you least expect it. I always bring holy water. I had the holy water bottle with the flip top, and I doused myself and everything around. I mean, the bottle, the top, everything went flying. But instantaneously, I began to feel, all right, let me see where I am here. Realizing immediately that I was in big trouble, I somehow managed to pull out my bottle of holy water and splash it everywhere. This thing backed off, glided along the ground and out of sight around the building. Now, the town hall, the back of the town hall, it went around the back side of it, the back corner. Now, the only way I can describe this is the instant it went around that corner, okay, I'm not sure. It must have been at the instant that it did, because the cars were already, when I started walking, I realized at this time that Steve might be in trouble. I was on my knees at this point because I had this tremendous pain in my chest. And I'm thinking in my mind also that Steve might be in trouble. So at some point when this thing went around the corner, somehow it or something else took its place, but there was two cars, two jet black cars, and I believe that they were Lincolns or maybe Cadillacs. Like I said, during these instances, your mind, you go into an Oz-type state, even myself. It's very hard to be able to remember exactly what happened because you're exposed to these forces in some way, and it creates, this happens in other paranormal subjects too, like in UFOs encounters or Bigfoot encounters or whatnot. It seems surreal. It's a surreal type of event. It's not something that's, you know, you're going to remember something at an amusement park that happened. You know, it's not, it scatters your mind. It leaves you just, you don't know what happened. But anyway, at this point in time, I'm on my knees. I had gotten up. I turned towards where Steve was. I started going in his direction, and I see these two cars. Now, they're only about a foot from each other. They're one's behind the other, and they're glossy, shiny. They come around this horseshoe of the road here, and they come and cut me off from Steve. So I'm standing there at the end of the grass where the road starts, and it's basically right in front of me. The window goes down, and when the window went down, there's nobody inside the car. Then the window went, after a period of time, after a few seconds, the window went back up again. No sound from these cars at all. And the strange part about this, it was gravel. There should have been a sound. And then the cars just went right up the road, right out the gate. They never went one way or the other. Like I told you about that road is in front, that there's the only road that goes straight in front of this building. They didn't go one way, they didn't go the other. Now, when I saw Steve, his eyes were wide open. He was in shock. I knew I was in shock. It's just, I can't explain it to somebody who's never experienced something where you have these types of forces around you. I don't know if this had to do with Pine Bush. I don't know if it had to do with that place. I don't know if, you know, for some reason we were open at that time, something that had to do with him.
Well, something happened. I don't know what the connection backwards, you know. Or was it just a one-off, I don't want to say fluke experience, because that doesn't qualify it either, but.
Yeah.
Connected or not connected.
Yeah, I spent about 4 days trying to review this and trying to go over in my mind, because I'm not in contact with the other person who was with me. I haven't talked to them in years. And like I said, when you're thinking back on this, it's like the encounter that Barbie and I had. We were coming, crossing between Jersey and New York, and they had a UFO flap there. And Barbie and I saw an orange UFO that, as a matter of fact, all the cars on that road stopped. And I remember a truck driver, about three cars up in front of us, and there was a truck, and the guy was standing on the landing, you know, on the side when the truckers open the side, there's that step. He was standing, and he was taking his finger, and he was pointing, like, you know, telling everybody, look that way, look that way. And it looked like a large, glowing orange eyeball. And it went right into these, like where these apartment buildings were. It went right behind them. We never saw it again. And I said to Barbie, I don't remember the drive home.
Yeah, that's
it's like this, whatever it is, it scrambles your mind. I don't remember. It impacted me so bad, at least personally. Why seeing just a glowing thing in the sky would impact me like that, I don't know. But I don't seem to remember getting back home that day. And I wonder how the other people feel on that road, or whatever. What, you know, what they experience.
Because as you're telling these stories, I'm, you know, relating. So, I mean, nothing close to what you were talking about, but you know. And there are times, you know, I'm thinking about this, these different things happening, and I'm like, there's a period of time afterwards that I can't recall. Like you're saying, remember going home? I don't remember. You know. Like, say, I was under investigation, something weird happened. I don't remember getting... I mean, obviously, I got home, right? But
yeah,
I don't remember. There's a gap there. Like, I don't remember picking all the equipment up. I don't remember doing this. I don't remember doing that. But
yeah,
it all came. I mean, it was all home when we got home. You know, I woke up the next morning. Obviously, I did it.
It doesn't happen when you're working on cases. It seems to happen when it's personal to you.
I had one, but that was weird. That was weird. Really weird. It became personal to me, so...
Yeah. Like I said, anyone who's listening out there, I know there's some people out there who know what I'm talking about. You can't quite remember it correctly. There's something that doesn't quite let you, or something.
I'm thinking about it. It was more personal to me than I had, like, the team with me.
Yeah.
As a support, but this was between me and, well, anyways, we're not going to get it. We don't have enough time for that. Looking at the clock, we don't have enough time for all that. That's strange, though, that you mentioned that. And then there was a time where I could see people crossing the road that weren't really there.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about that, and I'm like, yeah, I don't remember. I mean, obviously, there weren't people there. Obviously, I didn't hit anybody because there weren't people there. But then, like, the rest of those, I mean, I remember that flash. And then everything after that is gone.
I've heard cases. There was a gentleman who saw three individuals that were, they looked normal from the front, but when they turned sideways, they looked like they were two-dimensional. They were very thin, almost paper thin. And he saw these individuals that looked like this walk into a building. Now, this was a distance from him. He just drove by. He became ill after this. And I'm thinking to myself, how did they know he was looking?
Uh-huh.
Whatever that was knew he was looking. He was a distance from these things. They don't know if he saw him or not. Somehow they did.
Yeah, and I...
And you've ever noticed that people, this force, it seems to in some way guide people to where they need to be. I don't think that UFO encounters, I don't think some of these are random. And I don't think a lot of these encounters with the paranormal are random. It's the people, it's even in cases, now this is a strange thing. I'll give you a real goofball thing out of the park with this one. Bermuda Triangle, you know, that story of those planes that disappeared, that whole squadron of planes that disappeared. Most people don't realize a little tidbit about that particular incident. And the problem with that incident is that one of the pilots that was supposed to be on one of those planes, okay, those planes can only fly with the amount of pilots that they're supposed to have, meaning that they have to have both guys on the plane. Some planes have to have three guys, Okay, they have to have the pilots on there. There was nobody else to fly on that whole base. The guy who was supposed to fly that morning, I forgot what his name was. They only mentioned this in one documentary, one of the earlier Bermuda Triangle documentaries. Nobody else does. But in this documentary, they also mentioned that the guy was sick. He had already completed all his flying time, and he didn't want to have to fly, but he went to the commander. The commander said, I have nobody else to fly today, so you're going to have to fly, and he didn't want to. He ended up going to the medic, and he didn't end up going up in time when they took off, and the commander ran into him and said, I thought you were supposed to be up in the air. I told you to go up, you know, and fly today. And he was, you know, they were explaining things back and forth, and then he kind of said, well, who's up there? There was nobody else to fly up there, but they went missing. But they could have took off without somebody else on the plane. Who was the guy? That's a question that's haunted me. Who was the other pilot that was in that plane? Did that force that took those guys produce a doppelganger that took his place? I mean, there was nobody else to fly on there. That commander knew very well that there was nobody else to fly that day. Who, for that plane to take off, there had to be the two. Every one of those planes had to have those two guys. Who was flying?
Dave, you did it again. I don't know. But, you know, there was a concern that I was starting to have about over there in Malaysia where those other jet airliners kept disappearing. Like, we were going to see it again. Like,
well, you know, they said that he may have committed suicide because he had panned the area that he grew up.
What am I going to do with you? You just crush me all the time.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying, they said because he flew... the way he flew over where he kind of grew up. It was kind of like a goodbye. And then he just off into a...
That's horrible, horrible stuff. Good grief, we got less than 8 minutes left. Ugh. Okay, so let's do this before we get any further. You mentioned the website earlier, and then you mentioned the one for the Men in Black encounters. Let's do those again before we totally forget everything again.
All right, let me bring that back up. It's a new one. I don't know. Top of my head. Okay, they can go to www.i-m.mx/phantasm/paranormal portal.
And you're going to send me that, right? Or Barbie will send it to me so I can link it
out. Could you send that to him, Barbie? Could you send this to him?
Because I wasn't that fast. And you said the other site's coming back, but what is it again? Oh, good. I had it right.
Well, it's actually going to be a new URL. We used to have phantasmpsyresearch.com. There was a reason why we had to do that at that time, the earlier days. But what it's going to be now is www.phantasmpsychicresearch.com, which it should have always been.
Right, but,
yeah. It was a problem. We weren't able to do that earlier.
So, I see Leon in the chat room. Been with you for a while. Barbie's in the chat room. Brian Parsons was in earlier. Today is quote unquote the 8th anniversary of the show. So you go back quite well.
Happy anniversary.
Well, the anniversary show. The date's like Thursday, but you know who's counting. It takes me back to way back when. You remember those days? You were doing stuff and just fun. I mean, it's been fun to think about. You know, this last week, because I knew you were coming on, and it takes me back to those days when you were doing all that. Do you miss doing that at all? I guess is where I'm headed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do miss it. It was a lot of fun. We were able to share a lot of information, and we covered a lot of different subjects. From fracking to Bigfoot. Or fracking Bigfoots.
Yeah, as I said, tonight's show kind of felt like that, because we were kind of all over the place. Like,
yeah.
Chopping it up.
Yeah, I really do. I haven't spoken to him. I talked to Ben. I talked to his brother, mostly on Facebook. It's
every once in a while I'll send him a message. He's busy writing, so if he's happy, I'm happy.
Yeah,
for
maybe
him.
We can come on. Maybe we could do a double decker and see if we can talk about some of the things and talk about some of the new things. See what he's been up to.
Yeah, that'd be good. I should get that figured out. See if I can get a hold of him and get it set up. That'd be good. Good idea.
I was going to say I will be posting that on the like I said that Marisite sister site, whatever you want to call it, temporary site. the Men in Black, and I wrote it a lot better than I said it. I wasn't really ready to kind of read that out, but like I said, when you're trying to go over these things, you want to make sure you get the details of what happened. And like I said, it took me 4 days to kind of think about how that was, you know. And I'm thinking about even the idea of the window, you know, and how long that was. And to my mind, it seemed like a few seconds.
Yeah,
or something may have happened to us. I don't know. I mean, I didn't even check the clock. I didn't check the clock. When that happened, I don't know if we lost time because I just didn't check. We were so freaked out.
The funny part is, like, the family went fishing, and I went for a walk because I don't fish. I don't have the patience for it. I said, I'm going to sneak around the corner. We're at the corner of this creek. You know, it just, seriously, 90-degree angle goes up around. I'm just going to go over there and take some pictures. I walked around the corner, took all of 2 pictures, and we're gone 45 minutes. And I got back, and my wife says to me, why were you gone so long? It doesn't take that long to take a picture. I'm like, what do you mean I'm gone so long? And I pulled my phone back out, and sure enough, it had been, you know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes. And she's like, did you get any good pictures? And I went, and then I'm like, oh, God, did I get any good pictures, you know? So I'm thinking, and I'm looking, I've got 2 pictures. And they were taken, like, 44 minutes and 46 minutes ago. And I'm like, what happened? Like, where did the rest of the time go?
Have you ever had a time where you were driving, mostly on the highway, and all of a sudden you don't realize that, you know, you were on the highway? You kind of lost your time?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know who was driving for a little while there?
Yeah.
That's happened a few times to me.
Yeah, like, or... I'll be like, I was going to get off on an exit or stop at a rest station, and then, you know, I look at, next thing I know, I look at the mile marker, and I went, oh, especially when you're stopping at a rest area.
One of my researchers, they were up in Pennsylvania picking up some equipment up there, and they ran into a fog bank, and there was cars behind them, and the fog bank was in front of them, and at some point in time, the fog bank was behind them, and no cars were in front of them. And they don't remember anything.
That's a trip, because this can happen to me on a good, like a clear day. Look.
It happens to a lot of people. Were you around any area that's known for anything? Any boulder areas, or is there anything around that area? Rocks, anything?
I don't think so. I mean, probably maybe something, because there seems to be rocks. I mean, there's a big statement of the night here. There's rocks everywhere, but.
I'm coming to the conclusion that this whole place is haunted. I mean, you know, so it can happen anywhere. I mean, we have red rain with human blood plasma falling in India to, phenomenon going here in the United States. I mean, it's just the gamuts. And also we have the booms that are occurring now. North Carolina, Virginia, New Jersey, all over the place. Oregon, Washington State. They were having it in Texas, too.
Did you hear what this guy just dropped on me with, like, less than 2 minutes left in the show? Raining blood.
Yeah, it happened twice. Once in 2001, just after the Twin Towers fell, and again in 2006. And human blood plasma what looked like. I'm not sure if they verified that, but human blood cells, I should say.
Well, Dave... I would say it's been fun, but it's definitely been informative. It has been fun. Not necessarily in the ha-ha kind of funny fun, but stretching the mind kind of fun.
It's a Slayer concert, maybe. I don't know.
Well, sir, I look forward to catching up with you again.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, and we will cover more ground next time we talk.
Well, I'm sure we will. Have a good night, man.
Thanks for having me.
That's a... Dave Considine there as we kick this one off and kick off the start of another year here. And that's what we're going to do. Keep tracking, keep grinding, keep sharing, keep retweeting, keep doing everything you got to do, because that's what we got to do. We all got to do it together so this thing can keep going fast and furious.
Views and opinions expressed on the Mallard Report are those of the host and participants. For past shows, social media links, and so much more, visit Mallard.com, MALLIARD.com. And thanks for listening.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 Cut.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.